But we've got something very exciting here for you right now. It's the Attitude Magazine Sex Education Panel. And then afterwards, I was thinking we could have like a practical and then maybe like a cigarette or just a cuddle. And then you can just leave me and not take my number. Actually, if you are tonight making an escape, we have an Uber code. How exciting. If you just put in student pride, one word, you'll get a discount. So please, without further ado, welcome to the stage Attitude's amazing sex education panel, chaired by Attitude's editor, Cliff Joannou. We're going to be hearing from Paris Lees, presenter, writer, and campaigner. We're going to hear from Deborah Gold, chief exec of National AIDS Trust, Stella Creasy, MP, and you can cheer already, you know who it is, the incredible Ollie Alexander, lead singer of Years and Years. So please welcome Cliff Joannou.
Hear me now? Sound? Amazing. Right, what an amazing panel we've got for you today. First up is Gemma Curtis from Diversity Role Models. Gemma, come on out. Sit on down. Stella Creasy, MP for Labour. Deborah Gold from National AIDS Trust. The stunningly beautiful Paris Lees. And Ollie Alexander. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us on this really wonderful panel. It's really interesting about SRE, which is Sex and Relationship Education. We're going to probably use the acronym a lot today because it's a lot easier than saying Sex and Relationship Education all the time. From my perspective, I've been campaigning about this for about 3 years, and every time I talk to somebody who's unaware about the issues around SRE, they're always surprised that the situation hasn't changed. And in effect, like in actuality, the guidance around SRE in schools hasn't been updated in 17 years. Now, if you think all of the advancements in LGBT plus, you know, rights and equality and society recognition that we have, even in the media, with, you know, artists like Ollie coming out and being an out spokesperson for LGBT plus rights, it's shocking that schools still do not acknowledge this. So you've got young people going to school fully aware of gender issues and sexuality, but it not being recognized in schools, with the majority of schools still not talking about LGBT plus visibility in schools, or even about SRE full stop. Like, you might get, you know, shown how to put a condom on a banana, but that's about it. One of the important things we want to highlight as well is that sex and relationships are equally important, and it's equally important that they're taught in tandem as well. And that's something we'll come on to later as well. But first, onto the gorgeous Paris.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm not going to say SRE because I like saying
I've added
sex.
Those adjectives.
Education.
Oh. Tell us about your experiences growing up. Like, when you were in your teen years and you were coming aware of your trans identity and you had no examples of trans people out there, how did you feel and what kind of examples at school were there?
I think, there literally wasn't anybody in the media who was trans, really. I think there was like Donna International and then Nadia, I think, like when I was at college. But in terms of sex education, we just learned about reproduction. And it was really exciting because we went into biology and the head of science came in and was like, okay, something's happening here. And she pulled the blackboard down and just wrote, naughty bits. And we just learned about how to reproduce, really, which wasn't much value to me at the time, because I was kind of, you know, I knew that I was who I was, but I didn't even know that it was possible to be trans at that stage. So I just thought that I'd have to be gay. Yeah. And actually, I became sexually active when I was 14. Haven't really looked back, to be honest, but what I was getting up to, you know, would kill your hair, and yet we weren't getting the education in school. So it's like, it's all about just pretending, oh, we can't talk to kids about sex.
So would you say you're putting yourself at risk, like unnecessarily, because
absolutely,
you were at school
yeah.
and things that you should have really been able to talk about at school?
Well, actually, the comments that Milo Yiannopoulos made recently, you know, saying that young LGBT people, young gay boys, in his words, being taken in by kind of older predatory men. I mean, he was saying that that was a good thing. Obviously, I don't think it's a good thing. That kind of happened to me. And I think this is really common for people who don't feel close to their families, don't feel that they've got support at school. I was completely excluded at school. I was bullied, picked on, I was excluded at home. I was told that I was immoral, that I was wrong, that I was an attention seeker, that I was a pervert. And I ended up walking into public toilets and doing things with people who really should have known better. So, you know, LGBT kids are highly vulnerable, may not have support at home, and we need to make sure that they're learning about how to have safe sex, but also how to look after themselves, issues of consent, you know, how to respect your boundaries and other people's boundaries, because if not, it's going to lead to more kids being abused, really. And it's not just, you know, getting pregnant. There's so many different issues, and I think we just need to be honest and have a conversation.
Yeah, Ollie, what was the discussion around sex and relationships when you were at school like?
We basically didn't have it. Yeah. We didn't have any. The guy that my form tutor was meant to give us a sex ed lesson, and when he addressed the class, he said, what is the best way to have safe sex? And a few of us were like, ha, I don't know. And he said, don't have it. Like, don't have sex. He then went on to say how he'd never had sex. So, like, I mean, for a start, I'm getting a sex ed class from a guy that's never had sex. Like, it's not going to be that helpful. And I don't... Like, gay... I mean, gay people didn't exist to him, to my sex ed education. You know, I had no idea how gay people had sex. And I think my first encounter of that was Queer as Folk, was literally a scene where they're like spitting on a hand, and it's like, I was like, what's going on? Like, why are they doing that? Like, I didn't understand how men had sex with men. It was, like, really scary. You know, like, I didn't... Because it was just not spoken about. It was, like, it belonged to, you know, a different space. It was, you know, you wouldn't talk about it in school, or, you know, it wasn't something that you spoke about. It was something that was dirty and hidden away, and, you know, it's, like... So, yeah, I didn't really have any sex education. Me and my friends used to just, like, talk about it. I'd be like, how does it work? You know, I just had no clue.
When did you start exploring, like, meeting other guys, and how did you...
I fell in love with a guy that was the year above me at school, and, yeah. No, I'm not... I've definitely made that mistake before. And we... he was straight, and I think lots of straight guys experiment in school with other guys. It doesn't make them gay, doesn't mean anything, really. Lots of people experiment, but I thought he was in love with me. It turns out, for whatever reason, nothing ever came of it, but we used to fool around, and that was probably, yeah, one of us was about 14, 15, and I had a couple of experiences with older guys too that I think, looking back, I realised I was taken advantage of, and I didn't. But at the time, you know, I was desperate for something, yeah. You know, for some attention, for some kind of education,
connection,
whatever it was.
Yeah. I mean, this is where the relationship side of it comes into, because it's often not just about sex, it's about making a connection with people. And relationships, part of SRE, is also about intimacy. It's about learning to appreciate someone else's body. And we talked earlier backstage about pleasure. It's not just about the functional aspects of sticking something somewhere. It's about being able to know why that feels good and when is that good.
It just does.
It just does. Deborah, how does these experiences, which are kind of like fumbling around, kind of trying to explore, put yourself in situations that you wouldn't necessarily do now, how does that feed into what we're seeing now in terms of sexual health and HIV?
It really reflects a wide experience that people have, and I think maybe when we talk about bad sex education or lack of sex education, it's much more widespread than we realise. And we know from research we've done at National AIDS Trust fairly recently, just talking to young gay men aged between about 14 and 19, the majority of them didn't learn anything about sex and relationships relating to LGBT issues at school, and then they didn't learn basic things they need to be able to protect themselves. They didn't learn about how to use a condom, what to do if there are problems with the condom. They didn't learn about the fact that they're at higher risk of HIV and that they should be testing regularly, where they can get a test, what they can do if they're at risk, any of those kind of really important things that are particularly relevant to protecting themselves. And so we know that it's a really widespread problem at the moment.
And we know that there was in the press recently, there was news of a decline in HIV rates in certain areas such as London, but we know that there's been an increase in STI rates, and particularly amongst young people, is that right?
Absolutely, and the rates of syphilis and gonorrhea, for example, among young gay men have gone incredibly high in the last couple of years, really just frighteningly high. And actually the rate of HIV among young gay men is also increasing, and it's one of the only groups that it's increasing in. So even though, you know, some of you may know about some of the recent things around PrEP and things that are exciting and offer opportunities in the fight against HIV, we are not there yet. And young men need to learn the tools to protect themselves and to have good, healthy, confident, happy sex lives, as do young women.
Yeah, it was everybody.
Yeah.
From what Deborah just said about the rise in STI rates and sexual health activity, did that ever cross your mind when you were young and you were having your early sexual experiences? Did you ever once think about sexual infections or?
I had quite huge anxiety about getting HIV, getting an STD. I had a huge anxiety about that. I don't know where that came from, actually. I think I was sort of came maybe from, I thought like any kind of sex was going to kill me or something. Like I didn't have a positive relationship with sex, and I think that's maybe part of why I was quite anxious about things, and I didn't have the proper education about, you know, what it was about.
Really makes sense, because when we don't talk confidently about these kind of things, what's left is the kind of leftover feelings that people have, even from the 1980s when some of the first stuff came out about HIV. And we want people to know what they need to do to protect themselves, but we also want them to know it's not the end of the world if you get HIV. There is really good medication. You will be okay. You just need to test regularly and take the right action to protect yourselves. And so getting that balance, that's all about being able to have a confident, comfortable conversation, and schools are a place where that can happen. And when it happens, it makes a big difference. It's just not happening enough.
Did you ever worry about STIs or when you were younger?
Well, I think it's a miracle I never got anything, to be honest. I think it's just so intimately, literally going to donate my body to medical science. I just don't think you can divorce it from our emotional relationship to sex. And I think for me, I was so insecure. So going out, I used to go out when I was like 15, 16, drinking, you know, looking older. I was always tall, wore makeup or whatever. And actually to have a guy kind of be attracted to me and think that I look pretty and feminine was actually quite validating. And my self-esteem was quite low. And so I would allow people to do things and to kind of compromise my boundaries and you know, to have unprotected sex. That's definitely happened. In a way that, you know, I know that there's a huge pressure on girls now in school, where kind of like harassment and abuse is almost seen as normal, and being pressured into sending naked selfies and being sent dick pics and that sort of thing. So I think it affects everybody, but I think that LGBT people and girls in particular, who might be struggling with real insecurities, and I know boys, straight boys struggle with insecurities as well, but I just think if we teach people, you know, that they deserve better, and if they're not getting that message at home and they're not getting good advice at home, then they're less likely to put themselves into situations where they're going to pick up diseases. And it's not just a simple case of saying just use a condom. It's saying you owe it to yourself to use a condom. You deserve to have safe sex because you matter and you're important and you count. And that's something that a lot of queer kids just aren't hearing.
Yeah, you mentioned, just going on exactly that point you just made, in a way it's harder, isn't it, when you're queer or identify as LGBT plus and you're looking out to the world, you're thinking, I know I'm this because the media talks about trans or queer or bi and society is talking about it, but at the same time school isn't recognising it. So it, in a way, it makes you feel more lonely, doesn't it? Because the environment you're in and the peers that you're around might be using homophobic language, and it's just not something that's discussed in schools at that level where you should be made to feel comfortable, especially if, like you said, at home, you might have parents who are not so accepting. So, I mean, over to you, Stella. This is where we all come to the politicians, because there's a lot of change and discussion that's happened for as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
You know, Labour at the end of their time in government tried to bring in a bill to change and introduce it, but I know it was too late and it got delayed and the election happened and then that got written down. Yeah. Obviously, it wasn't top of the Tories' agenda when they came into power. Caroline Lucas, the Green Party MP for Brighton, has tried to introduce a private members' bill, which obviously went nowhere because party politics won't allow somebody to bring in a change to government, which
So I've been an MP now for 7 years, and we've had three opportunities. I've been tabling amendments as well. We've all been trying to get sex and racial. Who here was taught compound interest at school? Okay, I'm going gambling with you guys who haven't. You know, composting, compound interest, they are all formal requirements of the curriculum. Consent is not. Bonkers, isn't it? And we know that last year alone, there were 47,000 reports of sexual assaults in schools, of which, I'm involving young people, of which a third of them, the perpetrators, were other young people. Right, something is going very badly wrong in how we are supporting young people to make the best choices about their bodies, about their relationships. I mean, you talk about your sex and relationship. I remember waking up as someone was waving a female condom in front of my face. I have not looked at a plastic bag in the same way since. And I am of the generation that had Section 28 brought in. That's how I know I don't look at... No, thank you. These things have not changed, but what makes it more frustrating in the last 7 years is that there's been a general acceptance that we do need to change this, but a reluctance to actually get on and change it. And in that time, the consequences of not changing have become all too apparent.
It's really shocking, actually, how you just mentioned... I mean, we're of an older generation here.
You don't look it either, Cliff.
Thank you,
see? Dear.
Stop flattering me. but it's funny how, like, in 17 years, the guidance for SRE has not changed, and yet, you know, the conversations have happened. Yeah. You know, we've got now online apps that you can hook up with somebody in 2 minutes if you want to. I know. She knows. Why are the MPs dragging their feet around this?
Actually, one of the really important things is people want to associate this with the internet, with sexting, with Snapchat. Jimmy Savile should teach us that exploitation of young people has been around for decades, for generations, and that's why it's really important that we get teachers.
Why don't MPs get it?
There's definitely been a point where people have said, somehow you're interfering with parents. But the thing I always, and their role in teaching their kids the best values, what I always say to people is, look, you can be the best parent in the world, but if your kid is walking into a playground or using a chat room where other people haven't been taught to value consent and value equality, then they are just as at risk. So the reason why we do sex ed is not to replace parents, but to support the best kind of values for everyone. Yeah. They can come again.
I think it's interesting because the statistics have also shown that most parents would like schools to teach SRE.
Yeah.
So obviously there's a real kind of like miscommunication or just misunderstanding with MPs, probably older MPs who are from a more traditional background where they don't want the state interfering.
It's not age, really? Actually. It's people being frightened. Look, there's a general consensus of people who want to get this right. But what we need, you are the best advocates for why this has to change now. Because I tell you, for the next couple of years, all my life is going to be, is Brexit means Brexit means Brexit means breakfast. But We have one more piece of legislation going through Parliament right now called the Children and Social Work Bill, and that is our opportunity to finally put this wrong right. And the only reason that will happen is if you make the noise to say, okay, just park Brexit for a moment, get on and protect young people, get sex and relationship into school, into every schools, and make sure that it is inclusive sex and relationship education. Because it's not just that this isn't on the curriculum, it's that there are those people who want to say, okay, we'll talk about relationships, we'll talk about consent, but we won't talk about same-sex relationships because that might be difficult and that might be controversial for people. And if we're seeing in the studies of teachers being worried about talking about same-sex issues in schools as it is, then actually the danger is, unless we make this legislation as comprehensive and inclusive as possible, we could turn the clock back rather than take it forward.
Is part of the problem with recognising the need for SRE is that it's always acknowledged as being an education issue, where actually the biggest impact on not having SRE in schools is on the health service. Like, you know, it's...
Do you know what? I think it's everything. I mean, 40% of SRE lessons in this country have been judged inadequate by Ofsted. And actually, one thing, there are some great projects out there. There's great work being done on things like female genital mutilation, on forced marriage, on actually getting good sex and relationship education into schools. But what isn't happening is that isn't being standardised across the country and the support being given. Nobody wants to have that teacher who, like Ollie said, says, oh, well, you know, I never had sex, or gets a female condom and goes, I don't know what this is, ladies, but have a look. You want a teacher who's confident and able to talk about these issues, who's given the proper support to do it. And the only way that's going to happen is if this is statutory and schools have to support it properly.
So what are the three amendments you mentioned before?
So there are a number of amendments. So there is new clause one, there is new clause five, and we might even see a further clause. But the most important thing about these clauses is that any MP anywhere in the country could vote for this in this bill, which will happen in the next couple of weeks. So you need to tell your Member of Parliament that you want to see sex and relationship education that is inclusive on the curriculum now, and just get on and do it.
There are some groups, I mean, it is doom and gloom, but it's not all doom and gloom. There are some groups like diversity role models that go into schools. Diversity role models doesn't necessarily work in the area of sexual health awareness, but they do talk about school bullying, which falls into the relationship side of things, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So I'm from a charity called Diversity Role Models, head of education there. We've been running for about 5 years, and we go into schools, primary, predominantly secondary schools, and we teach about how to tackle homophobic, biphobic, transphobic bullying. We do this through taking in people like yourselves. So we take in role models, and you would go in and talk about your experience of being LGBT or straight ally, even. And opens up a conversation. So,
but it changes minds, doesn't it? We were talking before, and you have some actual examples of how the work you've done has gone in there and completely changed the way a class reacts to LGBT plus issues.
It's amazing. We ask at the beginning of the session how many people would feel safe to come out in the school environment. So we ask anonymously, what do you reckon the percentage is? Around 10? Yeah, okay. So, yeah. Even now, so about 10% of the class would feel confident to come out. And we ask them why, and they talk about, you know, the fear of being bullied or judged, and the impact of that. We talk about the impact. So when we bring in these role models, they will speak from their perspective. They will talk about their experiences and create that empathy and that conversation where they could say, okay, I can see myself reflected here. And young people can ask any questions they want. You know, we don't have to answer them all, but they can ask any questions they want and just basically address any misconceptions, break down taboos, challenge stereotypes. It's really exciting. So we ask them at the beginning whether they'd support someone who's LGBT, and predominantly the majority of them would, which is brilliant. We then ask them if they use language which is homophobic, biphobic or transphobic, even if it's banter. And the percentage is so high. We have 80% in the class on average in the UK schools will say that, yes, we do use that language. By the end of the session, having met these brilliant role models who talk about their life and their struggles in a very positive way, it might be about struggles, it might not be, but end with a positive message, the results turn around entirely. So we have a greater result of people who would support someone, firstly, but even more importantly, they say that they won't use that language because they're aware of the impact, the direct impact on someone in front of them and how it makes them feel. And that's amazing. That's in a one-hour session. We went into a school last year in Tower Hamlets, an amazing school. We went in. When we got there, we did our workshops, but there was this kind of air of hostility. So there was a kind of strange atmosphere when we brought our role models to talk. And it wasn't open hostility, but it was kind of uncomfortable. They hadn't done any work on this at all. A lot of schools hadn't. We came out feeling a little uncomfortable. We usually feel really uplifted. When we left, so 3 days later, we got a letter at the Diversity Role Models office, and it actually said that 4 members of staff had decided to come out following our workshops. And so they decided, amazing, I mean, yeah. And that's the impact. It's not just a pupil thing, it's not just students, it's actually teachers as well feeling confident to be themselves. And if you've got that confidence in one teacher, then you've got a ripple effect across the school. And you've got the, you know, senior leadership team on board. And we went back to that school last week. It was actually a school that my colleague over there went to when he was at school. And, you know, he won't mind me saying he got bullied very badly when he was at that school when, you know, how long? 20 years ago? Sorry. So the difference is unbelievable. We were with year 8 all day, and it was supposed to be quite a difficult year group. And they were mature, accepting, polite, showing support. And it wasn't just about the LGBT students. It was about how would they support a friend and why they wouldn't use that language. And it was amazing. So there's some really good work being done, but we have to have this in every school.
And the problem is it's so piecemeal, isn't it? Like, you might be in one school down the road and have this amazing, like, atmosphere and attitude of openness, and then you could go 2 miles the other way,
yeah,
and the head there or whoever the teachers are completely opposite direction, and the students there, the LGBTI students, they actually have no one to reach out to, and it's completely piecemeal. There's no consistency,
and there needs to be, yeah.
It's so important that it's statutory. So it's not enough to say that the guidance is good. Mm. It's got to be a legal minimum that every child in every school has the right to learn these things.
We talked about SRE. It's the focus just been on relationships as much as sex as well. And it's also about, you know, recognising for women as well, because, you know, there are, for example, women are subject to so many negative images in society. You mentioned before about, you know, girls and getting being forced to, like, put pictures of themselves on Snapchat or sending images of their bodies out, you know, guys increasingly more so. This is just as important in terms of, like, understanding your own body, not just in relation to having sex with somebody else, but in respecting your own boundaries, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, well, we could get rid of the patriarchy. That would be a good start.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you. But yes, SRE is about all of the different ways in which sex and relationships and the things that young people need to learn to navigate their life in a way that is confident and where they have the level of self-esteem so that they can take the action that they need to take to live good lives, basically, in all of the different areas. So go on.
The reason we need consent on the curriculum is too many young people don't realise they can say no.
Yeah.
But also, saying yes can be a great thing and an empowering thing, yeah, too. What worries me is we almost seem to be going backwards in people's understanding about coercion, and actually that's in every single relationship. But we need to put the word sex in there too. None of this is consistent across our schools. And also, one of the things, how many people here went to a religious school? Okay, so people make presumptions about religious perspectives as well, and that's not fair on people who have strong faith. It's almost like it's become one of those subjects that everybody and nobody is talking about. The big fear of the Daily Mail. Well, I read the sidebar of shame every day, and they're talking about sex too. So giving people positive impressions about what good relationships look like, how saying yes in that context can be really empowering and pleasurable, is just as important as also being confident to say no. The point is, what you're talking about just doesn't happen enough in a consistent and professional way across our schools. So teachers struggle too. We've got to support teachers who want to make the right choices as well.
Just, I mean, you asked people to put their hands up before. How many people in the audience had an acceptable level of SRE at school? Oh my God, I can't even see, like, there's like one hand over here, there's a few over here. That's terrible. It's like some over here. But that's, I would say...
Can I jump in, actually? Because you've made a couple of comments about Section 28 and the Daily Mail. I'm not sure when Section 28 was repealed. Was it like in the mid-noughties or something? So I think it was still in play when we were at school, but definitely fell like for a couple of years afterwards.
Well, it continues, though. A lot of teachers still live in the shadow of it.
It's really young to me. Like I went to university and there wasn't a thing called Wikipedia. How many people here actually know what Section 28, because it was in 1988 it came out. So it was actually legal in this country not to talk. I mean, the idea was that somehow you were promoting homosexuality to talk about it. And that was actually part of the law. That's how backward it was. So it frightens me that people don't realise that's what you're
saying. Can I just say that this is happening now and that Section 28 was actually followed on after a couple of years of gay people being subject to a kind of witch hunt by the tabloids and the Daily Mail, and that's exactly what's happening to trans kids now. A lot of fabricated stories, a lot of hysteria being whipped up around what toilets people use, and we've seen this in the States with the evangelical far right. And I met a girl a couple of months ago in Leicester, so from the Midlands where I'm from. She's 16. She is completely supported by her family, completely supported by her school. And amazing that the BBC got the access. And they went and spoke to the head teacher, and she said, yeah, she uses the girls' facilities. It's not been a problem for anyone. We've spoken to parents. You meet the girl. She's happy. She's excited about going to college and leaving school and living her life. It's just not an issue. And I don't think that it's paranoid to say that I am concerned about the kind of misinformation and the hysteria that's being whipped up at the moment, and this idea that you know, trans rights are in opposition to women's rights, and that, you know, keeping trans people out of same-sex facilities is somehow protecting women and children. And I think that the work that Diversity Role Models is really good and important, and similar to something that we do at All About Trans, in the sense that many people have never knowingly met a trans person before, or maybe some people haven't met a gay person before. And so those dangerous stereotypes are so far removed from actually what are highly vulnerable kids. We know that, I know this is going a bit off topic from sex education, but, you know, actually 48% of young trans people have attempted suicide. So we're not talking about thought about it, attempted.
But it's all about visibility. Like, you discuss these things in school, suddenly you're visible as a person. So it tackles these issues of mental health, it tackles issues of suicide rates, it tackles all these kind of issues that blossom out of SRE.
Yeah, and it's all linked. And a book that's really helped me recently is Matthew Todd's How to Be Gay and Happy. And I do think that many adult LGBT people are deeply damaged because of their experiences growing up in a transphobic, homophobic society. And I think it should absolutely be mandatory, because some people are gay, some people are trans, like, you know, and the law now says that employers have to protect people. So it's all right saying, well, I don't want my kids to be gay, I don't want my kids to learn about this. They're going to have to maybe grow up and get on a bus next to a gay person and be okay with that. They're maybe going to have to work in an office with a trans person and share a toilet with them. And
exactly.
They need to be educated on that.
I think we underestimate how much us hiding ourselves in our formative years, like when we're learning about ourselves, damages ourselves moving forward. Maybe not in huge ways for some people, but in small ways, where you might be in the supermarket and you're having a joke with your friend or holding your boyfriend's hands and you let it go because somebody looks at you funny. Like, Ollie, like, you've had this huge transition from being a private person to being this public figure to being this outspoken LGBT plus role model. I mean, your speech at Glastonbury last year gave me goosebumps. I was in the crowd watching it. Round of applause. Looking back at your education and your visibility back then, like, how did you find the strength? Where did you find the strength to be the person you are now?
God. Well, I suppose I've found that being open about my experiences, and the thing is, it's like what everyone's been saying, like Paris was talking about, everything's part of a much bigger picture, you know, and everything's linked together. So whether it's that, you know, I was really bullied at school and I had, you know, quite a traumatic childhood in some ways, it impacted my mental health, and then growing up gay added to this sort of picture of distress, and then that, you know, feeds into the wider world and how society treats gay people or people that, you know, have mental health issues. And so it's quite, anyway, what I found was being open, there is strength in being open about things personally, being vulnerable, allowing yourself to be vulnerable and talk about your issues and how you feel is usually met with encouragement and a similar minded, you know, point of view, because everyone experiences similar things. And so I found that being open, and it was a bit of a jump, I sort of felt a bit like it was a shot in the dark, so I was like, are people going to hate me? But the opposite happened, and actually I have been, my sort of personal development in a way has really been bolstered by the support of all these people that I never had even met in real, you know, just because they liked the band or they liked, you know, what I was saying or something. So it was like this crazy, you know, like I still can't get my head around it, if that makes any sense. But
so
then,
if that support was there when you were younger at school, you wouldn't have had those necessarily, had as those extreme anxiety issues building up, I guess.
Well, I think, yeah, I wish that there had been just a place you could just even talk about being gay or talk about what it might be like to not be straight or to feel like you weren't comfortable in your own skin, just to have that forum available, because it wasn't, you know, I mean, still, just to what you're saying, like, I mean, still now I'll get in a taxi, you know, and if I'm with, you know, someone, like, I don't have a boyfriend, so I'm not going to pretend like I do. Oh, God. but, like, if I'm with someone, you know, who I might have been on a date, whatever, like, holding their hand or something, like, I will sort of do, like, a, you know, like, because I'm still scared of that, you know, and, like, I don't.
We're just going to, we have to wrap up now.
Sorry.
But one of the things that we could all do here is actually, like Stella says, get in touch with your MPs. Like, send in messages to your MPs about how they need to support this bill, which I think has been read on the 13th of March around that date.
You can even tweet your MP, by the way. Sorry.
You can,
tweet your MP.
Tell them that you will not accept anything else than inclusive sex and relationship education. Every relationship has to be talked about. So you want them to stand up to anybody who wants to bring in Section 28 by the back door.
And use a condom.
Use a condom.
But there is a tweet that we're going to send out, which is going to go on screen somewhere. Is it?
Oh, that
it's on screen. Take a note of that tweet, and if everybody sends that tweet, which is going to Ms. Theresa May and Justine Greening, maybe they might pay attention.
but every single MP can vote on this. So there's 650 MPs, so all we need is 323, because you've got my vote.
All right, apparently it's not turning up on screen, I've just been told. So basically, if you tweet Justine Greening, Theresa May, hashtag student pride, we want better sex and relationship education now. Also, go on the website for your local MP. You can just one click and you get an MP's email address and you can message them straight away. It's the most important thing anybody in this room could do today.
Can I say Absolutely. Something as well? I mean, don't underestimate your own power in being able to campaign. The work that we do, we have student equality groups now that are coming up all over the place, and they might be LGBT, they might just be anti-discrimination groups, which is amazing. And that's everyone coming together. And we recently worked in a school where the students campaigned for gender-neutral toilets, and they ran assemblies on that and shared that with the school. So the students did the assemblies, they wrote a letter which went home to parents, everyone knew what was going on, no problems at all. And it's just about being open and visible and having that language.
Donald Trump wants to tell you that you have no power, that he controls the agenda. You have power in your voice, and you have power in how you lend your voice to other people too. So don't just hashtag it, go and talk to somebody. Go and actually tell somebody that you want to see this change now, and help other people tell their story too, and we will change this. Out, because he's gone.
I love how you got Donald Trump in there. That's perfect. I think we're done now.
We're done.
Yeah.
All right.
Bye, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
so much, guys. That was incredible. Loads of you just said so many amazing things. Stella, you're so empowering. I feel so powered up and ready to fight. Please give them another massive round of applause to Ollie Alexander as well, and Cliff. It was so horrifying listening to how, well, I mean, I know how bad it is. Our sex education system in